this federal contractor prohibition on having super PACs fund federal elections has not been repealed or overruled.
The Joe Miller campaign challenges super PACs. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 20th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, young Native people express strength and pride at the Elders and Youth Gathering in Fairbanks.
I'm proud to say I turned 17 years old today, and I've been sober for all 17 of those years.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering online courses from any location. Information at distance.uaf.edu. And by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
A federal judge is ordering the Obama administration to review whether polar bears are endangered under federal law. U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan wants the Interior Department to clarify its determination that polar bears were merely threatened rather than in imminent danger of extinction. Sullivan's request keeps in place a 2008 decision declaring polar bears in need of increased protection. The Bush administration said in May 2008 that the polar bears are on the way to extinction because of the rapid disappearance of the Arctic sea ice upon which they depend. But it stopped short of declaring the bears endangered. Sullivan heard arguments this morning about whether to list the polar bears as an endangered species. The Center for Biological Diversity and other conservation groups argue that the polar bear should be considered endangered rather than its current lower grade of threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act. They filed a lawsuit. But on the other end of the spectrum, the state of Alaska says the bear is not in danger and so should not be protected at all under the ESA. The Endangered Species Act requires special protections for species in peril, and the state says that could hamper development. The environmentalists want the feds to take action by tightening rules on greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change. The judge hearing the case, Emmett Sullivan, presided over the Ted Stevens trial 2 years ago. The Native Elders and Youth Conference is wrapping up in Fairbanks tonight with a potlatch. The annual precursor to the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention brings together performers and presenters to teach, entertain, and inspire. Marjorie Tabone of Nome talked the challenge and reward of learning her Inupiaq language. The University of Alaska Fairbanks student says 3 years of courses taught her grammar and words, but to be able to speak, she needed complete immersion.
I decided to study abroad. I decided to go to this place called Iqaluit Nunavut, which is in Canada, but there they speak only Inupiaq.
Tabone says it was an intimidating experience to learn to speak Inupiaq.
You can really make a fool of yourself trying to say the words. It's real guttural. It's real in the back of the throat. It's like, you know, learning those things. And it is embarrassing sometimes, but, you know, you got to do it. You got to do it just because you're not just doing it for yourself. You're doing it for all Inupiaq people.
Tabone says she's not as fluent as she'd like to be, but can better communicate with her grandmother and other elders, even though the dialect in Nome is different from the one spoken in Nunavut. Another speaker at the Elders and Youth Conference, Maka Montour, a high school senior from Yakutat, talked about mixing life as an American teenager with traditional ways.
I love to listen to music on my iPod, to check my Facebook. But I am also on duth. Young Tlingit woman of the Raven Moiety, of the Copper River Clan, from the house of the owl. We are both one and the same, and I have found a balance.
Montour stressed the importance of being strong and resisting the temptations of alcohol and drugs.
And it is taken when a person is in a time of pain and darkness, and they will do whatever it takes to forget about that pain for one night. But it ends up hurting you more than before. And I am proud to say I turned 17 years old today, and I have been sober for all 17 of those years.
Montour urged fellow young people to have courage, stand up to those who put them down, and strive for dreams. Another speaker, Earl Polk of Bethel, whose native name is Kuthluk, mixed the serious message of pride and survival with humor in a presentation called Get Down With Your Culture. He talked about the urban-rural divide, recounting the experience of a boy from Wasilla who travels to the bush and his shock at what's for dinner.
He went to the table and there was fish head soup with the eyeballs popped out. And he moved it around and one of the eyeballs rolled up and looked at it. There's an eye in my soup, man. I said, that's the best part. I'm not eating the eyeball.
Kuthluk urged people to blend modern and traditional culture to survive and prosper, saying it's too easy to get distracted and tune out all that's rich and good in the village. Kuthluk encouraged young people to have fun and be proud by focusing on the things that make Native culture unique, like hunting and wild foods. The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention gets underway tomorrow. AFN canceled a planned U.S. Senate candidate debate at this year's convention in Fairbanks. The move came as a surprise to many. AFN leaders say dropping the debate will leave more time for subsistence discussion. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Late yesterday, the Alaska Federation of Natives Board of Directors approved a decision to scrap a planned Senate candidates forum. The convention begins on Thursday, and an early agenda had set the candidates forum for Friday. But AFN President Julie Kitka said the board decided to drop the forum to leave more time for public comments on subsistence at an open microphone. The latest move is one more chapter in the drama surrounding this year's U.S. Senate race. The AFN board has passed a resolution endorsing incumbent Lisa Murkowski. Delegates will decide on that endorsement at this week's convention. Many Alaska Native regional corporations are supporting Murkowski's bid for re-election through campaign contributions to a PAC called Alaskans Standing Together. Now the rancor between the Lisa Murkowski and Joe Miller campaigns is escalating. Today, Miller's campaign upped the ante by filing a complaint against Alaskans Standing Together, citing violations of federal law. The complaint, filed with the Federal Election Commission under the 1971 Federal Election Campaign Act, alleges that 9 contributors to Alaskans Standing Together and a PAC officer have acted in violation of federal election laws by trying to influence Alaska's U.S. Senate election on behalf of Murkowski. Miller campaign attorney Thomas Van Flein.
It's not the Miller campaign that says this is wrong. It's federal law that says you're not supposed to solicit money from federal contractors.
Van Flein says a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision regarding FEC laws can't protect Alaskans Standing Together or the corporations that have contributed to it.
We do disagree with that. We believe Citizens United was limited to subsection D. 441C was not addressed by the Supreme Court, and its constitutionality has not been challenged. And our perspective today, it's a valid federal law.
Van Flein says the question remains if the named corporations are federal contractors.
According to their own websites, they are.
The complaint names Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Otna Incorporated, Bering Straits Native Corporation, Chelista Corporation, Chugach Alaska, Sea Alaska, Nana Regional Corporation, Koniag Incorporated, and Doyon, both as contributors to Alaskans Standing Together and as major suppliers of goods and services to the federal government. Miller is a critic of the 8A government contracts allowed Alaska Native corporations, which Murkowski has supported. When asked about the complaint today, Murkowski said she had not seen it yet. Murkowski is also the author of a bill which could benefit Sea Alaska Corporation by transferring to the corporation federal lands, some of which are outside of the original ANCSA land selection areas. Murkowski defended her bill on APRN's Talk of Alaska today.
All of the other Native corporations have received conveyances of their lands and are able to move and develop. Sea Alaska, for a host of different reasons, has not completed their conveyances. It's now 40 years, and it is time to resolve this.
The Miller campaign's complaint also names Alaskans Standing Together's Jason Moore as violating federal statutes by soliciting funds from the Alaska Native corporations and by contributing those funds for a political purpose. But Jason Moore says recent changes in federal election law view contributions to candidates as a form of free speech.
Well, this is clearly a desperate move by the Miller campaign to try to salvage their campaign, which seems to be falling apart at the seams. This sort of ridiculous complaint comes late in the process. The FEC will have little time to really analyze it in order to come up with some sort of a valid ruling prior to the campaign. So it's just a distraction more than anything else.
Moore says Alaskans Standing Together is on legal ground to have a voice in this year's election. The Miller campaign complaint calls AST a front and asks for a criminal investigation. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, early voting woes in Homer.
There was an individual that came in and photographed the notice in the voter booth and filed a complaint with the Division of Elections.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Among the issues voters will be asked to approve or reject on Election Day next month is a nearly $400 million spending proposal, a general obligation bond package centering on educational projects. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
If it passes, the bond proposal would provide a lot of work for next year's construction season. $20 million for a pool at Mount Edgecombe in Sitka, $18 million for the State Museum, Library, and Archives in Juneau, $20 million for Fish and Game for a research facility on Near Island, and a little more than $3 million for a new vocational education facility in Kluwak. That's more than $61 million. The cost goes up another $59 million for university campuses at Kenai, Prince William Sound, and Matsu. On top of that is money for schools in Alakanuk, Kipnuk, and Quingilinuk, a total of $128 million. And the two biggest items, $60 million for a community arena and athletic facility at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and $88 million for a new life sciences building at the university in Fairbanks. The package came together quickly. House Finance Co-Chair Bill Stoltz, a Republican from Wasilla, showed members the final plan in a floor amendment in April. At that time, he said the reason for putting it to the public this way was that the federal government was set to pay 35% of the interest on the bonds when they're issued.
This bonding measure, taking advantage of this unique window we have with the Build America bonds passed by the Congress and the President, who we often send some harsh messages to. This is one thing that they've done we are seeking to take advantage of.
Stoltz said the schools were the top three priorities on the list of projects wanted by the Department of Education. The Life Sciences Building was the number one priority of the regents of the university. The athletic facility, number one on the list of projects from the Anchorage City Assembly. He said as a package, it's good policy.
I don't know other mechanisms where we can deal with these rural school needs, our post-secondary education needs throughout the state, urban and rural, other than through this measure, with addressing all such a breadth of school needs.
There were other ways to pay for the projects, though. The budget carries over a surplus of money for next year, and the bonds only add to future spending as they are repaid. Democrats pointed that out in debate. Although seeing what was available, they didn't vote against the measure. Les Guerra of Anchorage led the arguments.
We have the money now. We're going to be saddling folks who are going to have a hard time balancing a budget in the future this way. And we're in a world where we have 8.8% unemployment in the state, 20% unemployment in a lot of places in the state. And The problem with the bond from that perspective is the work doesn't get on the street this summer.
Guerra said the bonds will give the state a more difficult financial future as they're paid off. However, he was not critical of the projects. That's why he voted for it. The measure finally passed 40-0 in the House and 20-0 in the Senate. The question will next be on the ballot in the November 2nd election. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
On just the second day of early voting for the November 2nd general election, allegations of illegal electioneering surfaced at the Homer polling place inside City Hall. While state Democrats are up in arms that a list of the names of write-in candidates appeared inside voting booths, the Homer city clerk is calling the incident an honest mistake. KBBI's Aaron Selbig has the story.
The trouble at Homer City Hall began Tuesday morning when an early voter noticed a list of the names of write-in candidates, including Senate candidate Lisa Murkowski, was posted inside one of the voting booths. Homer City Clerk Joe Johnson says the clerk's office received the list from the Division of Elections Tuesday morning. The list, she says, was supposed to be kept on site and made available to voters who had questions about the write-in candidates.
However, it was hung in the voting booth by one of the clerks instead of being kept behind the counter. And yes, there was an individual that came in and photographed the notice in the voter booth and filed a complaint with the Division of Elections.
The voter who first noticed the list, Homer resident Bob Burns, then called the Anchorage headquarters of the Alaska Democratic Party. Party spokesperson Patty Higgins called the incident, quote, absolutely unacceptable, citing Alaska Division of Election laws that prohibit the sharing of information on write-in candidates at polling places. Higgins says the entire election is being compromised. Higgins and the Democratic Party are calling on Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell, who oversees the Division of Elections, to take immediate action.
We're calling on the Division of Elections to remove any write-in information, to ask if they've posted any information, to go and ask every single polling location if that list is up there or any other list. Give us a list of any polling places that have violated this law, and then make sure that the election workers from here out know that they can't post candidates' names or information or discuss them within 200 feet of a polling place.
Johnson called the placement of the list an honest mistake. She says the Division of Elections sent out a notice last week to election officials in charge of early voting stations, reminding them of the rules against electioneering. Johnson says she spoke with officials from the division Tuesday morning after the problem was brought to her attention.
They just asked me to pull those ballots that were voted when that notice appeared in the voting booth and isolate those ballots. And then when we send them in daily, and I'll include a note inside that they may have voted while the notice was up.
Johnson says there were 17 ballots total turned in between the time polls opened Tuesday morning and when the problem with the lists was noticed at about 10:30 a.m. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Hello, I'm Peter Kenyon, NPR foreign correspondent and former APRN reporter. Help support APRN's news mission by joining me on October 24th for the first of the new APRN speaker series. Go to APRN.org to reserve your ticket today.
It's stronger than marijuana, its highs are unpredictable, and it's legal. KSKA's Len Anderson reports on an over-the-counter drug whose popularity and use is spreading, especially among Anchorage's youth.
Jennifer Messick of Anchorage's Municipal Prosecutor's Office says the first thing to know about this drug is how it's disguised.
It's most commonly called Spice or K2, although it's marketed under a variety of different names. And it's actually sold or marketed as incense, and they do that to get around Food and Drug Administration regulations. It's most commonly sold at smoke shops around town, but it's also available at some convenience stores, conveniently right next to the 5-Hour Energy drinks, very attractive for our young kids.
Some other common names for this pseudo-incense: Spike, Space, and Magna. Mezik is Anchorage's traffic safety resource prosecutor. So why should she be professionally concerned? Well, partially because the drug is increasingly showing up on Anchorage streets. Literally. Mezik describes a spice-induced DUI arrest.
The driver dropped off his passenger at the airport in Anchorage, made it as far as the intersection of Tudor and Minnesota, crossed that raised median there three times, struck two concrete retaining walls, had a broken axle, a flat tire, and was still trying to drive on the sidewalk when the officer contacted him.
That's just one of several DUI arrests made by the Anchorage police stemming from use of Spice or K2. She says much of the danger is that the highs are unpredictable. That situation arises from the manufacturing process. It begins with a combination of plant material, which by itself is generally benign. Then chemicals are added.
The packages don't list which compounds are contained in it. Right now, we've identified 7 different synthetic cannabinoids that can be found in any variety of these packages. Some packages might contain only 1 or 2 compounds. Some might contain 4 or 5. Some might contain all 7. You just really have no way of knowing which of the compounds you're getting.
Plus, the mixing process can be dangerously casual. Mezik tells of a video from Missouri showing the chemicals being applied with pump-style insecticide sprayers onto plant material contained in a wheelbarrow. The batch is tossed about with a pitchfork, but the portion in the bottom is soaking up more of the chemicals than the top levels. Thus, even a batch with the same chemicals can produce widely different impacts.
One time, suddenly, you can have a very, very bad experience and quite different from your prior experiences.
Mezik says she's working with Anchorage Assembly members Mike Gutierrez and Paul Honeman to craft an anti-spice law. Senator Kevin Meyer has begun work on a state law. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
A Sitka resident has taken a lead role in the effort to reduce the threat of unexploded ordnance in one of the most heavily bombed countries in the world. Mark Gorman was vice president of community health for the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium until his retirement last September. He's now the country director for a non-governmental agency in Laos, working to assist victims injured by the millions of unexploded bombs remaining in that country from the Vietnam era. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has the story.
Mark Gorman's retirement was cut short by the earthquake in Sumatra that struck on his last day of work at Search. A week after turning in his keys, Gorman was in Padang working for a Los Angeles-based NGO called Relief International. Now, Gorman's retirement has taken him to another part of the world. He's been living in Vientiane, Laos since May, working on a 2-year contract for World Education. This Boston-based NGO has been in Laos since 1992, providing victims assistance and mine risk education. Speaking from his office in Vientiane via Skype, Gorman says the scale of the bombing that took place in Laos is almost unimaginable.
During a 9-year period, there were bombing runs over Laos every 9 minutes. And if we bring that home to Sitka, that would be about 132 flights a day landing at our airport around the clock for 9 years.
That 9-year period was during the Vietnam conflict, when the U.S. engaged in a widespread and mostly secret bombing campaign in Laos and Cambodia in an attempt to prevent the movement of Viet Cong along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Much of the ordnance used in the bombing are known as cluster munitions, a large bomb that carries between 300 and 500 bomblets, each about the size of a tennis ball. The Lao government estimates that there are 80 million unexploded bombs in the fields and forests of the country. There are roughly 300 accidents a year involving unexploded ordnance, called UXOs. Gorman says he was in a northern province recently to visit two boys, an 8-year-old and a 14-year-old, who had been wounded by cluster munitions while farming. Gorman himself has two boys. He says the visit caused him to reflect on the origins of the bombs and the impersonal nature of war.
Probably was manufactured in a munitions plant, probably in the Midwest in the United States, 45 years ago by some person earning an honest living, caring for his or her family, not recognizing the consequence of that work and not really being accountable for that. But where is that person today who created that cluster munition, and where is that person's grandkids?
Gorman says he has a staff of 25, some of whom also work on microfinance and cultural revitalization projects. Gorman says there are another dozen organizations involved in actually trying to clear unexploded bombs from Laos. Nevertheless, the U.S. is not a signatory to the Convention on Cluster Munitions drafted in Oslo last year. 111 nations signed the pact, which went into effect in August of this year. Laos was the first to sign. Gorman believes that the U.S. and a number of other nations, including Israel, India, and China, think that there is still a strategic role for cluster munitions. Gorman says the Lao people themselves do not dwell on the past.
They live very much in the present. It's a Buddhist culture. And a month ago, I was up in northern Laos, and I was speaking to an older gentleman who was about 65 years old. He was a former Buddhist monk in one of the most heavily bombed areas of Laos. And I said, "What did you do? What were you doing during the war?" And he said, "I was a monk, and I was living at my wat, which is at the Buddhist temple." And I said, "Did you experience any of the bombing?" And he said, "Oh, yes, we were bombed everywhere, and our wat was bombed as well." And I said, "Well, how do you feel about the Americans today?" And he said, "That was a government. That wasn't the people. The people of America are good people."
Gorman's wife, Nancy Knapp, is also in Laos working as a consultant for the Ministry of Health. She's on a leave of absence from her job at Search and will be back to work in February. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. You can follow us on Twitter at aprn. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by AT&T, your world delivered. Details at www.att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266. Doyon Limited, based in Alaska's interior, growing across the nation. And by
Fire Island Wind, a renewable energy alternative to imported foreign liquefied natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
Are home heating costs more than you can manage? If you're living on a fixed income or reduced income, the Heating Assistance Program may be able to help. To obtain more information or an application form, visit the Heating Assistance Program website at heatinghelp.alaska.gov or call 1-800-470-3058. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.